The Ryan Tuberty Show on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Sky Broadband. Get the power to do more with Sky's best ever Wi-Fi.
Well, our spirits have been lifted over the years by the wonderful work of Ireland's world-renowned concert orchestra conductor and choirmaster David Brophy, as he brought together incredible people from many walks of life to sing and perform out of their comfort zones and into glorious choirs. And now David's working on a new documentary series, and he joins us now to tell us more. Always good to see you, David. Thanks for coming in.
Morning, Ryan.
Where are we going this time?
We don't know. That's the problem. This is the choir where I make it up as we go along, because we can't rehearse.
Of course.
And so I'm forming a choir of people who work in healthcare settings.
Great.
Various healthcare settings.
Yes.
And there's a number of reasons for the choir. One of the reasons is I've seen the power of singing and what it does to people when they come together and sing. Mm. And I kind of feel, if there's ever a group of people on this island who need something positive after what they've been through, it's possibly these people, healthcare workers, singing in this choir. But there's another reason, and this is kind of a selfish reason as well, personally, for me. I think we've all kind of felt this, that, you know, how do we contextualise what's happened in the pandemic? I mean, I've found myself, and you're probably the same, and most of your listeners probably the same, where, you know, you're at home given out by the fact that I can't visit my mother or my father, or I can't, you know, do all the things that we're all restricted to. And then maybe later on online or on television, I see an ICU unit.
Yeah.
And I see what people have actually been dealing with, and I feel bad.
Yes.
Do you know what I mean?
For having had an opinion
and kind of gone, you know, like, I feel bad because I'm cheesed off today for whatever the restrictions are about, you know. So I think I'm only, even for myself, only going to be able to kind of process what's happened and put it in some sort of reasonably, you know, sane context.
Yes.
By listening to the stories of those who actually dealt with it, like at the coalface, you know, and that's part of what this choir is about, is for them to tell their story.
Okay, I agree, because it has been an extraordinarily horrible national, international trauma, and we're still in it. So there's no processing to be done necessarily just yet. And that's for all of us. Then go to the people you're talking about, people working in the healthcare settings, at the front, if you like, the front line, hence, type people who had marks on their faces from PPE equipment, who worked god-awful hours, who took that home with them. Then, not only that, they had, of course, go home and just get rid of all the gear and wash everything. It goes on and on and on. And these are the conversations, no doubt, you'll be having.
I don't think we know the half of it.
No.
I don't know the half of it.
I agree with you.
And part of it is, part of the choir is about kind of saying, well, like, what has this been like, you know? Yeah. And I mean, I know over the years that you can interview people till the cows come home and talk to them. But there's something about when they sing together that it's almost like it kind of, the act of singing together in a choir is like a valve being released. And I just want to kind of get that sense of what are the stories after the valve has been released, because they must be, you know, it's also the fact you perform, I'm a performer, you know, like, but always all these healthcare workers, no matter what they do, they all perform too, because they all have to go home from their shift, from their job,
and
take a deep breath and then go back in the next day and be up. And I think a lot of the healthcare workers have, you know, I don't know even if they themselves feel like after the, you know, what they've dealt in the past 13 or 14 months, have they even got the chance to kind of sit down themselves and kind of go, what has happened here, you know?
Exactly.
So it's like the reason, we can't obviously form the choir now because we're not allowed to get together and sing. But I also want to chart the journey out of this as well, because we are beginning the journey out of this. And it's to kind of see not only where we've come from, but where can we go as well. And that's what this is all about.
There was a moment in the first, I think, 4 to 6 months of the pandemic when the frontline workers and people in healthcare settings were being lionized and praised, and there was this clapping, and food was being delivered to hospitals and so on. And that seemed to kind of peter out a little bit, I think. And it was summed up for me only the other morning when I was going for a walk, and it was at the front of a hospital, and I saw two people in their PPE gear sitting on a hospital wall together, very lonely, exhausted. And the clapping seemed like a distant promise, you know.
It's interesting because, I mean, you bring up a good point, because I think the clapping came from a good place, because I think a lot of people, like, for example, me, all my concerts stopped, all my work stopped So suddenly I'm doing nothing, or I'm doing very, very, very little. I did some teaching. That was it. And we're seeing there's another group of our, you know, our fellow countrymen and women who are now working harder. Mm. And I'm working a lot less. So a lot of us felt, I felt utterly helpless. So you feel you want to do something. And even if it is to stand out and applaud or whatever the small gesture is, to say, we appreciate what you're doing. So they came from a good place. But there's also a point, I think, where a lot of people have felt, I don't know what to do here. Like, I know I wanted to try and get some, I went online and looked at, can I do some voluntary work here? That was very difficult as well. Because people, you can't go anywhere. You're meant to just stay at home, you know. So I think a lot of people have felt helpless.
Yeah.
And I think a lot of people, though, who are in jobs and who have, like, you know, delivery drivers, people who work in grocery stores and news agents, people who did what we would have, you know, called, you know, run-of-the-mill day-to-day jobs, you know, they suddenly were the essential workers.
Yes.
And we're obviously going to, we're going to have, our core is going to be just healthcare workers, but across the healthcare spectrum. So if you work in housekeeping and you've changed sheets, or if you've cleaned the loos, or you work in maintenance of the building, or that, we're not just looking for doctors.
Or the musical porter.
Or the musical porter. Exactly, yeah, you know, yeah. That these are the people we want in the choir, you know.
Okay,
and,
good.
So it's meant to be across the setting. And it's also, it's a nationwide choir. It's like, it's why I'm kind of here, because all the choirs I've formed before now have all been based like in Dublin or in Leitrim or in Waterford or in Cork. Or
yes.
This is the choir where, and it's largely because of Zoom and because our initial rehearsals will be on Zoom, we can actually have people from all over the country, from Donegal down to Kerry.
So it's the full Irish.
It's the full Irish.
That's the musical full Irish. And yeah. You've done this before in different contexts. There was the homeless, there was the carers. What does the choir as a community, and what does the music as a phenomenon do to people who feel that they want to be part of something?
I don't know. This is the weird
thing. Do they
tell
thing. You afterwards?
You see, the thing is, this is like, I'm convinced this is like a big bloody iceberg.
Okay.
And I only see the 10% of it.
Yeah.
Because, well, I can tell you what I know. I can tell you that I've seen people in front of me like change, completely change. And particularly, you go back to the High Hope Square,
yeah,
where I had so many homeless people and people affected by homelessness at the High Hope Square, you know, and you see people in front of you. And like I remember having conversations with people in the choir initially, and they don't make eye contact with you. And you can see they've, you know, these people are, to some degree, they're broken in some way. They've got low self-esteem, and just how they're general, how they talk to you and the interaction, you know. And I can see after 3 weeks, they slowly open, and the singing does that to you. I know people who've sung in choirs that I've directed before who'd say to me, I say something to Maureen beside me in second altos that I would never tell my husband.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, that the choir seems to be, I don't know what it is, it's like what you'd call it, a safe place or something.
Yeah,
or it's,
yeah.
And it's almost like, yeah. Like I know with the High Hope Choir in particular, I saw that as kind of a drop-in choir.
Okay.
If you, like a lot of choirs are very, not that they're competitive or anything, but they kind of, you've got a lot of members in the choir who say, no, we're going to really sing really well, so you've got to come to all the rehearsals.
Okay.
Whereas High Hopes, I kind of felt, look, if you don't make next week's rehearsal for whatever reason, that's fine. Come in the week after. So
if the High Hopes choir was a drop-in choir, I suspect this one will be the choir of catharsis.
Yes, I think so. Catharsis is a good word, actually.
For people to unpack, to use that expression,
yeah,
to analyse, process a bit, and among like-minded souls.
Like-minded souls, but also people who have had similar experiences,
yeah,
to them. And I also, one of the things that I think as well, we've heard so many times as well, that people in healthcare settings have used skills that they weren't required to use before COVID. I've heard of stories of people who've been redeployed.
Yes.
Or people who were poor or did some training on the job very quickly to do other tasks that they didn't normally do because of staff issues or whatever, you know. So I think people, they've been through a lot. And I think it's not that the choir becomes a place where everyone's going to be analysed and we all have a good cry,
sure,
together.
Of course.
But there is a space if you want to engage with people around you who did things that you didn't, that you thought you were doing on your own for the past year.
You're looking for recruits, obviously, but you have a few already on board. One of them is Fiona Ash, and she joins us this morning. Good morning, Fiona. Nice to talk to you.
Morning. How are you?
Good,
thank you very much for having me.
Not at all. I'm here with David, who I'm sure you know at
this
stage.
Hi, Fiona.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks.
So Fiona, you work in the hospital sterile service department at Tata University, so you keep an eye on all the instruments that the surgeons use, among many, many other things. How has your COVID experience been, and I don't mean your personal story, but I mean broadly speaking, as somebody who works in the healthcare world, how would you characterise it all?
I think mainly seeing the effect it had on staff members, you know, the trained staff, you know, the just sheer exhaustion on their faces and the impact it's had on every department, on all staff members across the board. It's not just trained members of staff, doctors and nurses. It's the cleaning departments, the catering, you know, support staff across the hospital. It was, you know, really impacted on them massively in the change in role in hospital.
One of the things that was so striking as we reminisce almost at this stage about the early months of COVID was mm-hmm. the fear of the unknown. No one quite yeah. knew who, what, why, where, when any of this was going. And mm-hmm. there you were, you know, at the coalface of it. You probably looked into many people's eyes and saw that fear.
Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah, my own included. Just the unknown of never seeing this before and how does it affect people. It really was quite scary. It really is quite scary, you know.
And you had to, you know, keep an eye on yourself as well, of course. But when did you contract COVID?
In April. I was redeployed to the wards in March from my department. And I think I was there about 3 or 4 weeks before I became ill.
And your husband?
Yes, and one of my sons became sick with COVID as well. I had isolated in City West in the hope to keep it out of the house. But unfortunately, my husband and son started to get symptoms after I had left. So they were here and I was there. And the other three children had to isolate themselves completely. So it was a bit difficult for my husband at the time.
I can only imagine. And did long COVID factor as well?
Yeah, I think it takes a long time. I suppose every person is different how it affected me. I think it was just sheer fatigue going forward. You know, it took a few months for the fatigue to lift. You know, walking up a flight of stairs when before I could run up and down flights of stairs, whereas that kind of took a while to come back for me. My husband didn't really affect him in the long term at all. And my son still can't kind of smell or taste food. So, you know, but teenagers tend to swallow the food, they don't chew. They just throw it down the throat.
That's for sure. Good to hear nothing's changed since I was a kid. That's good. And Fiona, what about when you were you had that exhaustion and you had to overcome COVID experiences? So what, were you working as well throughout that afterwards?
Yes. So I was off for the isolation period. And then when I came home, obviously two people in the house were still sick with COVID. So I isolated for another 2 weeks here at home. And then I went back to my own department in Tally University Hospital. I think kind of late April, early May, I think I returned to work. Mm-hmm. So yeah, it was every day kind of you'd have a good day. And then a couple of days later, you'd be you know, feeling that exhaustion again. But it did lift. It just took time.
Can you sing?
Yes.
Oh, thank God. After all that. So this is
yeah,
good news.
Took a while, yeah.
And the idea of a choir for David's healthcare workers choir, was this something that piqued your interest pretty quickly?
Oh, very much so, yeah. One of the people that I work with had noticed it on the notice board and, you know, she put me forward for it.
So, yeah.
And, yeah, so it's a huge privilege to maybe be able to be part of something like that. You know, I seen the other two choirs that David had worked with. And, like, it was really something, like he said earlier, to see that change in people during the process. It really does lift you. And being in a room with other people singing that sound and the impact of that sound beside you, behind you, in front of you, it's really quite uplifting.
David, it's beautifully put by Fiona.
Yeah, you've got it in one, Fiona. Yeah. God, I mean, you talk about it's a privilege. It'll be a privilege for me because, I mean, every choir I've worked with is a privilege, you know, but it's the privilege to see people just come together and sing. And if you've summed it up like perfectly. It's being in the middle of that sound. And it's also like one of the things that's happened over the past, you know, 13 or 14 months as well, is that we've all become, you know, we're all relying on screens a lot more as well and technology. And a choir is like really the antidote to technology. Everyone has to put their phone away and you just sing, you use the air to make a sound. And of course, air has been the big issue in all this. That's how a lot of this is transmitted, you know? So the notion of being able to get back into a room and use your air for something to create sound. And it's, as Fiona says rightly, it's being in the middle of that sound. It's what brings me to it, you know? I love it so much is that you, and you get like 80 people in the room and the amount of sound they make together and that sheer energy, and it comes from, you know, if you sing, you sing with your whole body. It comes from your toes up to the top of your head. It's like, it's all encompassing. It's a real physical pursuit together. It's like a team sport, is what you call it. And the sound around it, I've been in rooms when it's so visceral, it can be like overwhelming almost. You know, you kind of go, my God, all these people pulling together, working together in this way. It's an amazing experience.
As you know, Fiona, we're very social creatures, and to be involved in a collective soundscape like this must be very heartening.
Yes, yeah, definitely. And like David said, everyone's behind screens at the moment. Everyone's behind a mask, and you can't touch one another, you can't hug, you can't shake hands. Things that the Irish are famous for is, you know, being very welcoming and very sociable and, you know, warm creatures. So not being able to hug people when you greet them and shake hands. So to get to the point where we, you know, would be able to be in a room and doing this, you know, it really would make a huge difference, I think, for a lot of people that have been really in the thick of it for a really long time.
That is for sure. Fiona, it's been lovely talking to you. Thank you for your time and good luck with the choir.
Thanks very much.
Thanks, Fiona.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Take care of yourself and the family. And David, let's talk a little bit about that now. That's Fiona is a perfect example of who will be joining the choir. So from the listeners to the show this morning, what do they need to do?
Will they need to email Healthcare Choir?
healthcarechoir@tyrone-productions.ie. And we'll simplify that completely by putting it up on our Facebook page, and you can just go there and take it down.
One thing I would say, Ryan, is that, you know, when I first started forming choirs for documentaries, I had never worked with choirs who were made up of people I didn't know. So for example, with the High Hopes Choir, we didn't audition everybody. Mm. And that for me was like, I felt like that was the weirdest thing in the world. What do you mean we're not going to audition anybody, you know? And we had people in the choir who, you know, who said, oh, I can't sing, or I can sing, or I've done this before, you know? And one thing I noticed about Irish people is that, like, I've worked with choirs in Eastern Europe, quite a number of choirs actually in Romania.
Yeah.
Everyone sings. And you never meet anyone say, I can't sing. It just doesn't exist. And you also don't meet people who are scarred from being in school when they've been told, you know, oh, well, I was told by blah, blah, blah that I couldn't sing and I was given a tambourine instead of letting sing in the choir. And there's a lot of Irish people actually who have to say, I can't sing.
Yeah.
So the big privilege for me over the years has been to witness people who told me before the first rehearsal, I can't sing, this is not for me. And I've kind of cajoled them into, well, just sit at the back of the room and maybe you might join in every now and again.
Yes.
And over the weeks to see them actually sing. And sometimes I go down and listen closely and go, ooh, that's a bit not necessarily in tune. But over the weeks, they get better and better and better. And then people at the end of the experience, the ones who I remember the most are the ones who said to me, I couldn't sing and now I can.
Yes.
And it's that, I suppose, giving someone the chance to discover their own metaphorical voice as well.
Yes.
Which is people who've been through a lot, who possibly mightn't say anything. They might, you know, because there are a lot of healthcare workers, I'm sure, who've gone home. You know, Fiona talked about being in self-isolation for a while. They've been on their own. They haven't been able to tell anybody about it, you know. And they might, I just think of the people who possibly, after all this is over, will go back to whatever normal life we can muster for ourselves after all this. And possibly not offload and possibly not tell people what happened to them, you know. And in the same way that people who come to me and say, I can't sing, they've discovered their voice, their singing voice, over the space of weeks and months of rehearsals. I do think there's room in the choir as well for people to discover their own emotional voice and tell people their story. And that's very important as well. So I am looking for people who feel that the choir is not for them as well, because they add so much to the choir, the people who feel they can't sing, because I've you know, worked with people who've kind of developed this love of singing that they would never have. And people say to me at the end of the choir, this has changed my life.
I'm a
different person.
Yes.
I now know, a year ago, I wasn't the person I am now. And it's because, not only because of the singing, but it's because I now feel I can sing, and it's done my confidence, my self-esteem, the world of good. And this is the stuff that, this is the magic, the alchemy that you find in these choirs. You know, and I really want that.
I've overheard an ostensibly introverted or shy person singing without me knowing them, that I was listening to them. Pitch perfect. They're there. And they're just magic. Those people who don't want a microphone. They don't want attention. They just have the gift of the pitch.
There's the great thing in the choir is that, and this is, you know, even from my day singing in choir years ago, when I was a kid, and even when I was in college, I was singing in choirs. It's that thing of, you know, you won't sing on your own. So you won't, unless maybe you're in karaoke and it's possibly the early hours of the morning for a few drinks and you know, like, so, and then you can relax into singing, you know, Uptown Girl or something on your own or whatever the hell you want to sing. God help us.
Yeah.
But it's the fact that you go and meet people and you can sing, and really you feel it's kind of a safe place to sing, and you can let your sound out completely, and people sing really make a huge sound. And even the physical sensation of just making a big sound, I think that's why people who play team sports, a lot of things they really enjoy is they get out on the pitch and scream at the far side of the pitch. I'm here, like, I know. And that release is so important, you know, and the choir gives people that release as well, you know. So I've seen it over the years. I really want people from all healthcare settings to really get involved in the choir. It's a nationwide choir, so no matter where you are in the country.
How many roughly?
I mean, I've had choirs in front of me of over 1,000 people, and I'm not saying that this is what this choir should be,
right?
Because we can only accommodate so many people, you know. Like, initially we're going to have to rehearse on Zoom, which I'm dreading, because I mean it's not possible.
Dread to think,
but eventually we will get in the one room, because this will eventually pass. So I'm not putting the limit on the numbers, you know.
Okay, I'm dying to know, like, what sort of songs would this pick? I mean, because I presume you have to pick songs that suit the people that are singing them. You don't have to, but I'm sure you'd like to.
I mean, like, choirs, when I was first joining choirs, like in the 80s and 90s, they weren't like they were nowadays. So like in the 80s, a choir would never sing stuff that's in the charts.
Like Creep.
Yeah.
You know the way they do Radiohead. I was an 80s boy too, and it was Laudate Te Domino.
Yeah, exactly. The first choir I joined, we sang like Plain Chant. That's what we did. You would never sing anything like that was in the charts ever. Sure. It just didn't exist, you know.
Yeah.
And nowadays, it's just seen as being, it's fantastic nowadays. One of the things I will do with this choir is I will turn to the choir and say, what do you want to sing?
Okay.
And I've done that with all the choirs, with High Ups Choir and with the Choir of Ages and with the Cares Choir last year. You know, what do you want to sing? Because that's such a crucial thing, because everybody has the song they go to. At the end of the day, when they've had a really, really bad day and they've been through a lot and they've seen things they don't want to really remember, they go to their playlist on their phone and they say, this is the song I'm going to put on. The musical hug.
Yeah.
And they kind of, it just is a space where, like, I know for me as a professional musician, music is a place, it's like a different country. I go there. I go to make music, and it's a far, far away place. And then I stop making music and I come back. Oh, here I am again, back on earth again. So it's a form for me of escapism. Yeah. And I'm not the only person who feels it. I know anybody who has, you know, their playlist and their phone, they put their song and they go to that place. Sure. They can forget about everything else and just breathe while listening to the song, you know.
Some days, you know, on a Friday or Saturday, like if I'm getting ready for the late show, I'll have Helter Skelter by the Beatles in my dressing room or something like that, right? Or it could be a Sinatra day. And then Sunday it's Kris Kristofferson and maybe Johnny Cash or something. And then Monday might be classical, you know.
The power of music is absolutely to take you away from not only take you away from what you're doing, but also to put you in a mood. Yeah. When we all listen to music, if we're going to go out in the light in the town, we've all put the tracks on that we want to as we're getting organized, you know, like, so we want people to, I want people to tell me what songs they want to sing. Okay. I'm very open-minded on all this, you know.
Okay. This is going to be wonderful. We're going to follow your endeavors because we're fans of what you do. So David Brophy's Healthcare Workers Choir, that's the call out this morning. You know what to do. You can email, get in touch, healthcarechoir@tyrone-productions.ie. Get stuck in and don't be put off by your own lack of security when it comes to these things. I'll finish by telling you a quick story, because I interviewed Padraig Harrington, the golfer, recently. And afterwards, we finished chatting. And I said, love thee, because he was at home. I love your jukebox there. It was a big jukebox. I didn't know you were such a music head. He said, I adore music. He said, my brother's very musical. He said, I have not sang one note since I was 12 years old. I said, go on. He said, because a teacher at school said, Harrington, you can't sing.
There you go.
And he was, and he didn't, not one note.
Yeah.
He said, I would love, and he actually said it himself. He said, I would love to do a swap with the singer and I'll teach them to play golf. They teach me to sing because he's ready for it. But
golf is my sport. I take Padraig Harrington
come on.
No, golf is, I was a member of St. Dan's Golf
You're
Club.
Joking
I would take Padraig Harrington
what?
On.
There's a TV show I'd watch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I would take Padraig Harrington on if he taught me how to play golf. I mean, I was a nine handicapper at one
match
stage.
Together,
you know?
Because yeah. you're two lovely fellas. Yeah. And that's I didn't know you were a golfer.
I'm playing golf longer than playing the piano, would you believe?
Oh
yeah, I started playing golf when I was 10.
Can't believe it.
So the thought of Padraig Harrington.
Okay, let's
line that up. That'd be fantastic.
That idea is on ice, but that sounds intriguing. But the point is, I'm only echoing what you were saying earlier on, which is some people, and because he's a well-known person, I thought I'd mention him. We're told at a young age you can't do it, and it just kills it dead.
Yeah, and I've seen when that's released, it's one of the most powerful things I've seen in my life.
The genie,
because I've worked with like some of the best musicians on the planet. I'm lucky; I've worked with the best, highly trained classical musicians, and I've had some great experiences with amazing musicians on the planet.
Yeah.
But to actually see somebody who never sang until they're in their 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, I had one woman in the carers choir last year.
Yeah.
She was in her 70s, I'm sure, and she'd never sung a note. She said, "I can't sing," and she stuck with the rehearsals, and I saw her change, and that's the magic. That's the magic I want.
That's the magic we're going to see, no doubt about it. David, great to see you as always. Thanks for coming in.
Ryan.
All right, that's a very exciting project. As I say, we'll be following that with great interest. The text number, as always, 51551.